Welcome to Alex and Annie, the Real Women of Vacation Rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are joined today with two smiling faces. We have Ben Coleman and Rebecca Ballard from Revan Research. So good to see you guys.
Oh, it's always such a pleasure. Anytime talking to you two is just always a great way to start a week.
Oh, you always make my day, Ben. You're always laughing at me when I say my name.
It brings me so much joy. I'm just so proud of y'all and everything that y'all have done. I mean, I know I say this every time I get on here with you guys, but just to meet you, Annie, at San Antonio at VRMA a couple of years ago, and then to meet Alex at the Women's Conference in New Orleans, and then to see where y'all have come, it just makes me smile every time I think about it.
Thank you. You're very sweet.
A lot of great memories for sure along that path. So
I'll never forget that oyster log we ate.
I was just thinking about that because as we record this, it's Monday, November 13th, and we're preparing to go to DARM and the Women's Conference. And I was just thinking, we had that amazing oyster. It was like a whole. I mean, it was
a log.
At least three or four feet long of oysters, and that was in New Orleans, but. We'll have to see if we can find somewhere in Nashville that could maybe have that many oysters for us.
I don't find a cocktail bar somewhere in Nashville. We can at least have
it. We'll be able to find something, I'm sure.
I learned a stat being in Nashville this weekend that there are 700 churches and there are 699 bars in Nashville.
Oh, that's wow. Interesting.
Had no idea, but there's a stat for you. So leading into DARM, we've got a lot of things to talk about. I think, you know, DARM is a great conference for people to kind of look at their revenue management tactics and their education and really hone in on their skills and maybe talk with other people and see how others have done over the last 2 years. We obviously coming out of COVID, everybody was really happy and the numbers look great. And then coming into this year, kind of went wah, wah, and everybody had a panic button kind of all over the place. So we thought we would visit with you guys to talk about what you've seen this year, what you've seen in the markets, and then we'll kind of dovetail into DARM and what you guys are going to be doing at that conference.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that kind of a little bit looking forward maybe first, I'm looking at pickup. I'm looking at where markets are compared to the same time of last year to this year, and also looking at where they ended. And I think we're really going to see demand normalize. I'm not saying in any way that demand's going to pick up back to COVID, but I don't think we're going to see the volatility that we've seen. I say that because we have access to a ton of data through Key Data and that partnership, but mm-hmm. being able to look at where ADRs finished in 2023 versus where they're booking at 2024, I think we're starting to see our industry realize how price sensitive markets are.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to realize how poorly we've priced further out, especially post COVID. And I think you're starting to see the industry fix that as well. But repeat bookings are and at least in the markets that we're in, which is about every market across the country these days, you're really seeing pickup and you're really seeing an occupancy kind of be pretty flat year over year, which is great. I think is great. Last year, it was for sure down early and then kind of picked up. We were talking about this a little bit just for a minute in our kind of pre-call. You know, the fact that June outperformed July in most markets has always shocked me. It perplexed me. I've never seen that before. You know, I've never seen a time in the panhandle of Florida where we don't sell out. We did not sell out before the July week this year. So I think you're starting to see it normalize. Rebecca's got some great things to talk about of kind of how to handle some struggling units, how to handle some underperforming units. But I think that demand's normalizing. I think I feel confident in telling homeowners that as well. I think that it's a good idea to tell homeowners that. To really kind of set their expectations for 2024 now. I think that, you know, we'll talk about this later. The other thing I'd love to talk about is getting really good at technology. I thought Andrew Kitchell from Wheelhouse gave a great, great, great presentation at the Streamline conference about that. And I don't think that there is a better time than right now. We're coming into the holidays. We're going to be eating a lot of food on the couch, watching football, or at least that's what I do. And hey, so let's get our laptops out and let's just start playing around in your PMS. Let's start playing around in your pricing tool. Let's start playing away Interno or Breezeway, all the different pieces of technology. And internally, you know, we've grown a lot. And a lot of that is thanks to you guys, too, for referring us as many people as you have. We really, really appreciate it. But, you know, we really want to be a bridge. We really want to be a company that can help leverage your entire tech stack. You know, I think that between me, Rebecca, and Kelly, we know about everybody in the industry. And we want to help get you to the right person when something's struggling. We want to help with that customer service side of things. We want to help leverage Breezeway or Turno into more bookings on the front and back end of gap nights. We want to help you use Wheelhouse to the best of its ability. We want to empower your homeowner relations team to truly have confidence to talk to homeowners. And that's really, I think, that's my message for the next year.
And world peace. You guys are great. And I think there's so many things that you are tackling and things that are not necessarily being talked about in the industry. We had this conversation a long time ago, Ben, probably a good couple of years ago, about revenue management and marketing and how those departments need to come together. And I think in some companies that we talked to, we're seeing that done successfully. A lot that still have not quite gotten their hands around it. But I will say, you know, you mentioned you and Kelly and Rebecca, you know, everybody. And I think that is accurate. I was just down in Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, and got to meet several companies that they mentioned that they work with you guys and just, you know, saying your praises from the rooftops. So that was great to hear.
That's all, Rebecca.
Well, she's got a great reputation down there. I know that.
She does, yeah.
But
we're a good team. Yes.
Yeah.
Great team.
I do have one question though before we start diving into all the topics that Ben named. You guys are in a lot of these traditional vacation rental destinations that have a good portion of repeat business. What about markets that don't have a lot of repeat business? I mean, if you're going to an urban market, those people are typically not rebooking for the same week next year. How does that play into things? And maybe Rebecca, if you want to speak to that and your strategies.
Yeah, I mean, really with the urban markets, it's knowing what events are happening, knowing, you know, we've talked a lot this year about Taylor Swift and what she's done. She's got that second leg of her tour going. So like our clients, we've got a client who is in the UK and we looked at his calendar and sure enough, he has two bookings for Taylor Swift, one's from a US guest, one's from a Canadian guest. And he's like, I never get, you know, reservations this far out. And he was like, do you really? I was like, I will bet you $100 they're going to see Taylor, you know, and then she's coming back through and our client who's in Miami, we were talking through that, like, hey, you've got to get that dialed in. He's like, no, it's, and I said, it doesn't matter. Like Taylor Swift, Miami, you can rent anywhere in Miami. They are coming to be in the presence of her, whether they're going to be or not. Like it's, you know, but it's knowing your sports schedules. It's knowing what championship games are, because there is a lot of money that you can leave on the table by letting those events go unnoticed. Definitely helps with your booking windows, especially in those urban markets that are normally a lot shorter. Seeing that, you know, spread out, but it really is knowing your market and knowing what is happening when to hold rates, when to pull them in. If you know that this announcement is coming, like it really is making sure your marketing team is telling everyone that you can walk to the stadium from your places, that, you know, just really capitalizing on all areas, because that does become a game changer, especially when you're having kind of a rough week or, you know, rough occupancy year. Those events can really push you over the edge and kind of make up some lost ground.
How do you guys keep up with that? I mean, how do you keep up with the events and schedules in all these different markets?
I mean, Taylor's easy. She puts it out everywhere. So that's easy to follow.
It's a lot of client interaction. We have to give a lot of credit. A shout out to Wheelhouse. Their model has really, really, really improved in the last year of picking those out and being able to sense demand, being able to recognize demand for those and just automatically push them up, which helps us. I think the other thing, Alex, in an urban market is understanding the difference of occupancy and ADR from weekdays to weekends. I'll say this, we've been asking Key Data and Wheelhouse to kind of build out a weekday weekend occupancy ADR RevPAR report for us. And I know everybody's working on it, but I think I love urban markets because you can really undersell the market and undercut the market for those weekdays to really start driving that year over year revenue up. And then all of a sudden you start, like, imagine you're coming into January and December 1st, with 35, 40% of your budget, of your forecast already hit. Now, all of a sudden, you can get much more aggressive on the weekends. You can push, you can hold longer and longer. I think that one thing I've just noticed from all of our urban clients is not really having a foundation and being like kind of in reality of what a weekday is worth. A lot of people that we take from an urban market try to price themselves kind of at the hotel level, but without thinking that, you know what, unless you stay 3 days, you're really still more expensive, even though you're 20% less from our taxes, from our cleaning fees, from our booking fees, from all that, and understanding it from the guest perspective of the total bottom line, not just all of our line items, but understanding that $125 a night at a short-term rental for 3 days is more expensive than $125 a night at a hotel.
Kind of going off of that, I mean, really understanding your events is super important. And I think, again, it's a game changer. And if people pay attention to it, a lot of times people just think they know what's going on, but they're not really paying attention and really like working with their Chamber of Commerce or their DMO to look at events that might be coming in that maybe they booked at a convention center property way down the road, but you can get some, you know, some reservations off of that. But it's also important to understand your inventory and the dynamics of different inventory. And we were talking about that off camera, like areas that are homes have a different booking pattern and a different type of guest than condo markets. So the Panhandle is a really great case study in that as well as the Carolinas. So why don't you give us a little bit of information or kind of like what people need to be mindful of when considering the different types of inventory that they're pricing?
Yeah, I think it goes back kind of like I'll take it from the urban side of things. I think that understanding that a 5-bedroom house is not near as valuable Sunday to Wednesday as it is Thursday to Saturday. I think taking a very surgical approach at the unit by unit level, looking at what overperformed, what underperformed last year, making decisions that way. And then definitely working with your chamber, definitely working with your DMO, understanding what's coming, getting ahead of that. And then I like to look at it as, okay, these events are going to help me oversell or overperform for my overperforming units, but I can also leverage that for my underperforming units to kind of push those up and to kind of continually just move them up. And I know Rebecca got quite a few things to say on this as well.
Well, I think it's knowing your market. We had a really great client who's down in Cocoa Beach, and they were doing some market research and found that there was not a lot of larger homes for rent on Airbnb or Vrbo. There was a huge need for that. There was literally a handful. And so they bought a unit that can be throughout the week, rented single units. They all have kitchens, they all have washers and dryers and all that. But then for far out, we've been able to rent the whole complex. And it has just blown their expectations on what, you know, weddings, family reunions, holidays. It's done incredible. We're kind of like, hey, you want to buy a few more of those? Because we need a little bit more. And when they asked, you know, we didn't know what people would want. Now, that same model probably wouldn't work in Destin because there are larger homes. There are there's a lot of inventory, you know, in those markets. So it's not as successful. So it's knowing what inventory is out there, knowing that those larger homes, if they're multifamilies coming, I mean, my gosh, I don't have children, but people that have kids and are involved in sports, like it is like an act of Congress to get a family vacation with two families with kids that are in sports to have the same vacation time. Like that's really difficult, you know? So that's where you see a little bit of difference with kind of the larger homes versus the condos. It's maybe one family, they're taking off work on Friday. They're, you know, going to be there for the weekend and be back at work on Monday or Tuesday. So it's very different knowing your guests, knowing who your target market is, really does make a big difference.
I just mentioned, because I know that you and Riley worked hard on this, about the one night stays for cruise guests. Like, you know, all of a sudden it's like, how did we not think about this to start with, that down in Cocoa Beach, they have one of the largest ports for cruises in the country. And Rebecca and Riley really worked hard. Rebecca, please explain what you did there. I think that's kind of another view to look at it.
Yeah. So they're in Cocoa Beach and Cape Canaveral, which is a big cruise destination. And we were trying to fill some occupancy kind of in a slower period of time. And because Riley does own some other units, he was like, what do you think about one night stays? And honestly, I was, you know, kind of like Ben was talking in the beginning of the call. I was like, man, I don't know. By the time you add your cleaning fee and your fee, I just really don't know if it's worth it. You know, operationally, can you handle it? Yeah, we can handle it. It might help give our cleaners some more work. Okay, great. Maybe try it on those units, that building that we were just talking about. Since you own it, we'll do a trial and see what happens. And I have never been so wrong about something.
Oh, wow.
In the first week, I mean, it was, 3 days. They had 25 one-night stay reservations, and we just opened it up within 7 days. It was wild. And I was like, what the heck is happening? And I'm looking, and it's like a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, not our premium nights.
Yeah.
And neither one of us knew what it was at first. I was like, is something wrong? Like, what did we do wrong? And they actually had someone on their team ask one of the guests that called and was like, hey, you know, what are you guys coming down for? And they're like, oh, well, this house, you know, sleeps, or this condo sleeps six. We're coming down for a family cruise, and we would have to probably rent 3 hotel rooms so we could rent this one property. Our whole family could stay here. We're flying in late. We just need somewhere to lay down. We're going to be up at, you know, 8 a.m. to go to the cruise terminal. And so that has been a huge occupancy filler for them, because we hold it within a certain amount of days. So they're still protecting the weekends, or we're still getting higher ADR, but it has come leaps and bounds for their end of the month revenue. And so we actually have taken that strategy, because we were able to use the data and show some of the other owners, because owners here one night stay, they quickly go to party, quickly go to this. And it's like, actually, these people aren't using your place at all. They're coming, they're sleeping, they're waking up, they're going to the cruise terminal. Like, they're probably using a shower, and that's about it. Not using a kitchen, not doing any of that other stuff. And so from the business standpoint, it's great margins. You're getting your cleaning margin, you're getting your reservation fee, your commission. You can do the math really quickly to find that it's very, and it helped with those cleaners. It helped give them work during the week when it was a little bit slower. Now, obviously, not every market has a cruise terminal, but we've taken this strategy to our client in Miami.
Charleston, any markets that have cruises, or, you know, I think that the overreaching concept there is just, you know, you got to think outside of the box a little 100%. Bit. You've got to reach out to guests when you see something that seems like a kind of a strange pattern. If you were testing opening up one night, two nights, if you're getting demand for it, call those guests and see, like, what are they there for? There might be something going on that, in this case, you guys can really package that up into a nice offering for a family. But I want to switch gears just a little bit. I know the last time you guys came on the show, you talked a lot about the difference in homeowners that we're seeing now and how rates are explained to them. And, you know, just what's happened in the last few years, that these homeowners that bought years and years ago that they wanted to either retire in these condos or leave them down to children, that's not the people that have bought in the last, you know, 5 years or so. These people really want to know what the return is going to be. I just had a conversation with a gentleman, Gonzalo, down in Miami, and he reached out to me actually because he was saying, you know, he just went to VRMA and he's like, nobody's talking about cap rates and, like, you know, these questions that we're getting from these potential homeowners that were going to list their property with us, but they are speaking a different language and they really want to know what that ROI is going to be on the property. But has that shift in the types of homeowners, has that affected your strategies and how you help the companies you work with and how they explain those things?
I wouldn't use the word helped. I would use the word probably forced to maybe adapt. You know, we've got a great mutual friend in Lauren Madewell up in Gatlinburg, and every time I see her, I love hanging out with her and June, and they are just great people. But she's got a big problem down there, of real estate agents basically giving rental forecasts out that are 12-15% cap rates that are not feasible.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of like when that happens, it's a hard thing. It's a very, very hard conversation to have when you buy something for $1 million that you're going to make X on, when you go, you're going to probably lose money for a little bit.
Yeah. And it makes the rental company look like they're doing something wrong, when it's like, no, you were just definitely, you know, overshown what the expectations should have been for it.
I've said it this way. I think our industry, like, kind of separating short-term rentals from hotels, I think our industry gets hit with everything a lot harder. I feel like I kind of say it, we're on the bottom of the totem pole. Inflation, that gets pushed down. Flight prices going up, that gets pushed down to us. Grocery costs going up, that gets pushed down to us. And all of a sudden, you've got a foundation with a homeowner, which really is a sacred relationship, if you think about it. You know, I've been saying this for years, that we don't manage homes, we manage assets. Try not to think about the amount of money, the amount of assets that we manage and what they're worth, because it freaks me out. But it's in the billions. I mean, it really would legitimately be in the billions of dollars. And you've got me and Rebecca over here just trying our best to plug away. and it's a scary thing. But starting that foundational relationship off, being completely transparent.
Yeah.
So if I was a property manager, Rebecca the same, Kelly the same, we gave ranges. And I would always give that bottom number something that I would hang my hat on.
No, you have to. Like you said, we work in a trust business, whether we're working with an owner or we're working with a guest. It's all about the trust. And I think that's the one missing component that I think the realty isn't bringing to the table, that we have to do a better job. And it kind of goes the full circle of, you know, losing what we are as a business. Like, we're trying to define vacation rentals, short-term rentals. Real estate has gotten involved and muddied the waters and muddied the conversations and made those conversations more volatile, just all the way across the board. And so I think as an industry, that's another piece of the puzzle that we need to pay attention to. And we need to do outreach to real estate. I know that within Verma, within membership, one of the things we talk about is like, how do we talk more with like the Association of Realtors? They have all of these people out there that are selling all of this property that people are thinking, I want to put it on rentals. Well, great. How do we get involved in those conversations so that they're not overstating the rental incomes? Because again, Lauren and I've had that same conversation, Ben, and I know exactly what you're talking about. We have it in the panhandle here all the time. And I know lots of realtors and I love them and they're great people. But if they don't understand the business, they're dealing with pie in the sky and best case projections to make somebody buy a piece of property and not really being honest and doing their due diligence to talk to a local management company to understand what happens. And so again, I think it goes back to what we need to do as an industry is outreach, not only to define us, but how we are perceived when people are trying to get in the business and buy into it.
And it really is, it's in their best interest for the realtors to make sure that they are leaning on a local company that's going to give them a realistic forecast, because I mean, that whoever bought the house or condo is never going to go back to that realtor if they had a bad experience. And, you know, I mean, eventually it's going to come out that the realtor gave them the wrong information. So, yeah. I mean, it's in everybody's best interest to try and work with the local companies.
And I think Rebecca speaks to this really well about what she did at her previous job, Rebecca, just how you teamed up with real estate agents.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, it's about educating the potential buyer and the real estate agent about the first year. I think that's one of the most missed opportunities, that nobody talks about how hard the first year is. Because the first year, whether they're coming on in the middle of spring break, so rates are already low, or they've missed the booking window for summer, it's tough. It's tough getting on the OTAs, you know, up the search. If you know, the reviews, all of that plays into year one. So I always tell people, I'm like, this is a year two projection. This is not year one. We will reassess once we find where it lands, especially this year with just markets operating a little bit differently and revenue operating a little bit differently. It's really, you have to have those hard conversations. And if that means that homeowner goes to, you know, a company down the street that gave them a projection $30,000 higher, keep that relationship, because they're going to come back to you in a year when they didn't hit those numbers and know that there was someone looking out for them. And we've heard that countless times this month, especially, of people that said, hey, you know, that projection you helped me with, and they went somewhere else. Guess who's starting with us on January 1? And so there is, you know, a goal in that and being transparent, and you might miss them the first time, but
they'll come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
But again, it's trust. And sometimes those conversations, I mean, they might be awful. You might be like, look, I can't get you anywhere near you need to be. But to your point, Rebecca, once they see that you were being honest in the front end, they're going to come back around.
Asking them, you know, why are you looking to move? If we've had some clients that bring us revenue numbers, and I'm like, these are good numbers.
Yeah, exactly. What are you really expecting?
We're going to take a hit in year one. Like, you need to tell them that this is actually not good. Ask them why they're looking to search. If it's because of housekeeping and they want, you know, better maintenance, or they want, you know, better communication, that's one thing. But if they're if all they're happy with all those and they're looking for more revenue, you have to be upfront and say that it's, we don't know what's going to be in 2024. You may want to stay put for another year, but if they have a pain point of one of those other things, sure. We would love to show you our laundry. We would love to show you what we're doing, you know, with communication, with our technology. Absolutely. But I think, again, it's, you know, like we've been saying over and over again, it's about transparency and it's trust. It's being the local guy. It's all of the things that we preach all the time that gets homeowners to continue to be on your program.
Yeah. And I think we all wish that the rental market really cared what the real estate market was doing. And it just doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
As close as they are to each other, they don't talk to each other. They don't get along well. And when you've got housing prices skyrocketing like they have, you've got inventory flooding the market, you've got coming off the best few years of our industry's history, all of a sudden something's got to give.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You can't keep that going. And I think that, and Alex, to kind of close the loop on this, you know, it is a different buyer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, and I think that different buyer, I want to call them investors. They may not have private equity money. They may not have, be a VC firm, but they're getting $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 of their hard earned money to invest in something for their kid, to invest in something for their future.
Yeah.
And they want to know revenue. They want to know what they're going to make. I like to think, and I think Rebecca does this as well as I've ever seen. I mean, we've got some clients that in their first meetings, they did not know what ADR was. And now they are confidently talking to potential homeowners. And they are picking companies that are much larger for contracts because they can stand up on the rooftop and preach their revenue management strategy confidently and clearly explain it. And all of a sudden, it's the transparency. It's the knowledge and the confidence. And all of a sudden we've got clients. I mean, we got this. I mean, she's just an adorable lady. She's so nice and kind. But you know, you get her in a homeowner conversation, she's gonna take you down. She's gonna- And I think that, and we've been saying this for a year or two now, it's time to get good at revenue management. It's not good enough anymore just to be good at it. You've got to explain it. And I think I said it the last time we were on the pod, you know, we built our industry off cleaning people's houses and upkeeping assets. That was enough. And it's not anymore. It's not enough just to upkeep the asset. It's enough. We've got to at least build confidence in the numbers that we're driving to that asset.
Well, we're portfolio managers, like just like someone who rent, you know, manages your financial portfolio. I mean, this is part of that portfolio and you should 100%. be able to dig into those numbers and understand it. And I think your point about, you know, giving the realtors kind of an education, like it's like we're all better together. And if an owner has a better expectation coming into it, then the management company can focus on what they do best. And you know, again, it's protecting the asset, running the asset, those type of things, but they don't have to be worried about like, did I hit that revenue threshold for that owner so they don't blow up and leave me? They won't have to worry about those little things because the expectations will be set at the very beginning of the relationship.
Agreed. And I love how you said that. We really are kind of financial managers. And I mean, could you imagine calling your financial manager and asking them a couple questions about your portfolio and them not being able to answer it off the top of their head?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Saying, hey, I think we need to have the same level of trust and keep this as sacred as possible to go, hey, you know what, Mr. Homeowner? Look, let me just, hey, I'm out at lunch. Hey, I'm over here inspecting a property. I'm doing one of the 95,000 things our clients have to do on a daily basis. And go, hey, I'm going to get back to you this afternoon, being able to pull the reporting or already having the reporting pulled just to go, hey, I've already got this. I've been thinking about your asset. I've been thinking about your property. This is where we missed it. This is where we're going to make up that revenue. I'm going to grab some July revenue. I'm going to drive occupancy in October to make up for it. But being able to confidently and calmly and concisely be able to talk to homeowners about that, I don't think that's an expectation that is too much to ask for. I think it's something that should be required.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much to ask for. And I think actually, I mean, you guys, we've heard some incredible statistics that companies that are working with you have grown their inventory by as much as 20% because of the information that you're feeding back to them.
It's 22.5% last year. I know that because that's the thing I'm most proud about. Because I think that the goal of revenue management is not necessarily making more money year over year. Sustainable revenue management is having more nights to book year over year.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. Having that information to make sure that you as a property management company and manager sound educated and that you're the expert, that's really, really important. And that you can speak to whichever type of homeowner it is, whether it is somebody that's newer on this investment side or someone that has been in it for a long time and is not happy with their company, but they might know the ropes a little bit better. And I think, you know, the personas of these homeowners is important to, you know, take into consideration. That actually might be an interesting topic for us to dive into one of these days, of the different personas and how to speak to them on different levels, not just revenue management, but there's a lot of psychology that goes into our industry too, at the end of the day.
There really is. I had a great conversation with Steve Schwab. I think it was at Streamline in Scottsdale, just about how he's like reading textbooks about guest psychology. And understanding that, like, hey, the person that books it feels pressure.
Yeah.
So the person getting it for everybody. Hey, what can we do to help them out? And that's why I'm such a big fan of Steve's, man. He's thinking outside the box. He's going on to eBay. I think he said he went on to eBay and he's reading like college textbooks. Like, I mean, thinking outside the box that way, I think only makes you better. It only makes you better. And it's kind of what I said too. Like, we're coming into a great season to get better at technology.
So speaking of getting better, we alluded to DARM is coming up in a couple of weeks. And so we're all getting ready to be there. We'll be there for the women's conference. And then for you guys, we'll be there for DARM. I think you guys have a couple of sessions that you're going to be doing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm doing a panel about what to do when your market is not performing. So it's a lot of different perspectives. I think we had such a great planning time. So it's only 40 minutes and we're sitting here going, how the heck are we supposed to fit all of this stuff in 40 minutes? But I think that we kind of tackled it as DARM is a conference where you get to kind of go under the hood. Like, it's not just where you get to talk about these revenue strategies and you're like, oh, that was a really great session. But like, what do I do? Like, what are my actual items to leave here? And as a revenue manager, that's how I left a lot of conferences before DARM. It was like, yeah, that person up there talked a lot about RevPAR and strategy, but nobody told me what I was supposed to be looking at or what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I think that DARM has a great group of people. The RevProf team is really, you know, doing their job as revenue managers to make sure that these sessions are, you know, people walk away with tangible items, that they walk away with knowledge and education. And that's something we're really passionate about, is just helping people understand revenue management, because it can be really overwhelming. And that's something that we always talk about, is making it digestible, bite-sized pieces.
Annie, you said it well too. It's like, we all get to talk. We all, like, everybody's interested in data and revenue management.
Well, and I think to Rebecca, you know, to your point, like, you do walk away from some of those conferences feeling like you were talked at.
Yeah.
And you were talked to. So it wasn't relevant. And the thing about DARM is it removes all the other stuff that's going on. I mean, Verma has so many sessions that are, you know, all over the place, from marketing to revenue management to housekeeping to, you know, asset management, whatever. This is very specific and very focused. And one of the things that I've always enjoyed about it is, having been kind of in all the different pieces of the facets of the industry, is that we can go and have a conversation about distribution, and it's not distribution, an ugly word. It's not the OTAs are bad. It's not that, you know, it's all just focused on direct. It's how you take all of these pieces and parts and make them into your special recipe that's going to make the success for you. But everybody talks about it. Everybody shares ideas. I mean, I think some of the stuff that has been shared at DARM over the years has been revolutionary for our business. Yeah. I mean, look at the things that Wheelhouse has done, Key Data has done. I mean, you know, there's just such incredible learnings that come out of that conference. So you're absolutely right. I mean, people are going there. They're getting to check under the hood. They're getting to ask questions. They're getting real-time answers and feedback and digestible nuggets that they can take back to their team and be like, okay, let's try this and we can do it.
I think for a lot of people, it's like, you know, this might be an interesting topic to explore as well, but like day in the life of a revenue manager, like what exactly are you doing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis as a full-time revenue manager, as somebody that's doing it part-time, that you might also do something else within the company? And when does it make sense to outsource, you know, some of this stuff? Like when is it too much? Like what size portfolio does it get to that point that you need some extra opinions on how things are being done? But I think, you know, a lot of the roles that are within our industry are they're different in every company, but there's a lot that's still being developed and made up as we go in terms of what these, you know, core competencies and responsibilities are. But I think there's still some confusion about like what an actual revenue manager does full time and, you know, where when that becomes a decision that a company needs to make.
I thought about it a lot, actually. I think it's way easier to outsource revenue management. I would not outsource distribution. I would have somebody in the office that knows the area, that knows the homes. Because data is data. We can look at, I mean, that's when people ask us, like, how do you manage homes that you've never been to that city before? It's because data is data. But organizing the pictures, making sure this is done correctly, making sure this is done correctly. And I think the biggest struggle that companies have is, Alex, what you said, is they wear so many different hats. All of a sudden, when do they have time for revenue management?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of like legacy companies, they will kind of take the stance that you have to know the area to do revenue management because you have to know the homeowners and you have to know what they're willing to take for a discount or not take for a discount. How do you guys overcome somebody that might ask you that question?
It's all about segmentation of your portfolio. I mean, we have a lot of tools. Key Data and Wheelhouse have given us those tools where we can have unit groups or we can have tags, we can set up minimum prices. It's all about communication with the property manager. As much information as they have, and they can download it to us, and then we can organize it in a way that we can move through pretty quickly. We have, you know, the price sensitive tag under our owner tag. So we know those owners are, you know, they want an occupancy-based strategy. They want to see money. They understand it. They get it. Higher ADR is not what necessarily wins RevPAR. They know that. So we have a way to tag that out, that we know that those are the units that we can move and we can adjust, that we don't have to go and ask for permission for. Now, on the ones that are a little bit, you know, have tagged for special owners and their special case and they do some different things, we'll pull those reports separately and say, hey, these are the restrictions that they put on, and this is what it's costing them. Because I do think that that is the job of the property manager to, because they have the relationship with that owner to say, hey, I know that you really want this $500 a night, but do you know that the median average in the market is at 225 right now?
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, you have to push back, because at the end of the day, then we can say, hey, we did everything we could.
Right.
Yeah. And it could be worth letting go of that unit, because I mean, if they've got 40 units in a complex and they've got one that is going to be a lot easier to work with, that they are willing to take what the market is going to give them, it's not worth keeping one that you're just having to jump through hoops like crazy, that, you know, you get one booking and you're taking a booking away from another homeowner that is much easier to work with and is better for a year round purpose.
Goes to, do you, and it makes me think, we're talking yielding and strategy, and you know, we touched on you know, there's rates, there's your type of inventory, there's your policies, you know, your restrictions, all your length of stays, like the one for the cruise.
Yeah.
But I think it almost goes, you have to yield your owners too. I mean, I think that you have to get into revenue management, like you have to manage the owners again, the expectation, and like, is it worth the time to have that one unit if you're going to have to go through hoops all the time, like Alec just said.
Well, and we tell our clients a lot, like, you don't, like, yes, you respect your owners. Yes, you keep that relationship, but you don't let your owners tell you how to run your business, because that becomes a very scary place. When you start bending the rules for one, then you have to do it for another. And all of a sudden your operations are upside down because you're doing this for that owner, you promise that to that owner, and nothing is happening correctly. Adding new staff is difficult. Oh, because Mr. and Mrs. Smith get these sheets and the Carsons, they get that and this and that. Like, it is, you can't scale a business by doing those things. So we tell our clients a lot, like, if you see those conversations happening when you're negotiating yeah. your contract, you have to set that boundary very Absolutely. Clear. Yeah, because yeah. 9 times out of 10, it comes back to bite you in the middle of peak season on a Saturday when you are slam busy and don't have help to fix it. That's when, as Ben likes the saying, the wheels on the bus fall off at that
when the wheels on the bus fall off.
He yeah. teases me because I say that all the time about, I'm like, the wheels on the bus have fallen off. The bus yeah. is on the side of the road. but just being proactive about that and not being afraid to be the business owner, not being you have to protect your team. You are protecting your operations. You're protecting your revenue by setting expectations of how you run your business and not letting owners dictate how you run it.
Well said.
And I would add on to that, just the one thing I'll add on to that too, is understanding how much revenue you need to generate to make that unit profitable, or to make that unit profitable for you. Hey, if you're going to pick something up that's going to do $30,000 a year, you're going to take a 15% cut rate on it. Hey, maybe I don't want to take that unit because I'm going to lose money for you. And like, you start thinking about, like, take Cassiola, take Orlando and Dennis and Michael down there. They, for them to take on a new unit, it's not just like, okay, let's go fill it in and track, because I know they use track as a PMS. Let's go type it out. No, they're on about every platform, every OTA out there. You have yeah. to there. And so all of a sudden the man hours just to put a unit live gets very, very, very expensive. And understanding the profitability of growth, I think, is mm-hmm. huge, because I think that you can definitely outgrow your profitability. You mm-hmm. can start taking on some units that, hey, maybe it's they're going to come stay in it for 6 months. Maybe they're going to come stay yeah. in it for 3 months. Or they're going to give out 4th of July, spring break, and Labor Day, Memorial Day to their kids. And all of a sudden, that $50,000 or $100,000 projection gets cut in half. And all of a sudden, your profitability goes down. All of a sudden, your time goes up. And you start really getting pushed and squeezed that way. I think understanding how much money you need to generate to be profitable at a unit-by-unit basis is massive.
Yeah. I would imagine one topic that is going to come up quite a bit at Women's Summit and certainly at DARM this year is going to be really looking at your inventory and deciding what properties you want to keep on your program. Because I think there's a lot of companies in the last couple of years have just grown so fast because there was so much of a need for property managers. But because they were growing so fast, they ended up taking properties that they would rather not have on the program anymore. But to your point, Ben, they're still having to spend time. And it's like, it doesn't justify hiring more staff at this point. And you know, Steve Schwab also has a great graphic about the different levels of how much inventory you have and how that correlates to what changes you need to make in terms of staffing to be able to support that. And mm-hmm. There's some levels in there where you can keep growing while you're not having to change things a whole lot. But once you get, you know, that from 50 to 75, 75 to over 100, 100 to 150, like, things start changing pretty quickly. And sooner, before you know it, you've got 400 condos and you only want 250 of them. So what do you do? But
yeah, it's a hard place to be as a property manager too, to go, okay, I've overgrown. I've got these 50 units I want to get rid of. That's 50 not fun conversations to have. It just, like, I don't get nervous about a lot of things. I don't get anxious about a lot of things. I'm pretty free-spirited. But when you got to start confronting people about this and, like, hey, I don't want to represent your asset anymore. I don't want to represent your company from a revenue perspective anymore. They're not fun. So taking looking more into the future, going, okay, I can take these units, but hey, in a year, I'm going to have to call them back and tell them I don't want them. Let's just not take them.
That actually leads in perfectly. I did this session at VRMA that I'm doing again at the Women's Conference about cathedral thinking. And I think cathedral thinking can also apply to revenue management. We're talking about it more from the lens of building a brand, but revenue management is part of that brand. That as you're building your business, you know, cathedral thinking basically means, you know, taking that long range vision and applying that to how you're making decisions within the business, knowing that a lot of the things that you decide or put in place now, you might not see the fruits of that for several years. But looking at your portfolio in that lens is definitely important. So,
Alex, I think that's great. I love that. I love that cathedral thing. I love that. That just sounds so great. Like, I was in the bar business before I back ended into this business. And it's like, okay, we got everything figured out. Now let's just go do it a million times.
Exactly.
But if you look at, take Apple, take Amazon, take the companies that have really done scale, you know, with billions in market cap, what did they do better than everybody else? They did the same thing well every day and didn't care that They might not have been profitable to start with. Hey, you know what? We're going to do the same thing. We know this works. We believe in our brand. We're proud of our brand. I think too that we need to be more proud of what we do. Because I am sorry, I don't think that you can tell me that being a CEO somewhere else versus being Lancer or Lane Stitcher is much different. You're managing 1,000 different things. You're having to get your team to do the same thing every day. You're responsible for a lot of assets, a lot of money. And being proud of that, being truly, truly proud of that, that you're doing the best that you can. And you know what? You're managing $500 million of assets and you're doing it well and you take pride in that.
Yeah. And knowing what you really want to have for inventory in your program. I just met with Matthew Deal with Element Homes in Orlando a couple weeks ago, and he was telling us about his portfolio, and they are all very high-end, large homes in Orlando. That there's a lot of homes in Orlando that have the game rooms and the pools. These are to the next level. Like, these are truly, truly exceptional themed houses. Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't have to have 100 homes like that. I think, I mean, they're a smaller portfolio, but it's a great business, and they're picky about who they bring on the program. And at the end of the day, they're happy with that. So it's not always just a quantity. It's about quality and living into your brand and the vision that you set for the company.
There's nothing wrong with having 50 themed houses in Orlando, and there's nothing wrong with having 400 condos in Destin.
Right.
You've got to go. This is the route that I'm going to go.
Yeah. Like
when people ask me why, if I would ever get back in the property, be a property manager again, I'm like, God, no, it's so hard. I kind of joke around saying if I did, I'd take 200 one-bedroom condos in Panama City and just rent the heck out of them, have as few cleaners as I can have them all next to each other, and try not to work 60 hours a week. But hey, if you want 50 themed homes, hey, that's awesome. We're working with Alicia down at Fun Vacay and Destin. And you know what? She sticks to her dang guns, man. You're going to come, if you're coming into her program, she's going to go through your house and tell you exactly what to do to get it to her level, because she is going to represent luxurious homes. She is going, she's got branded water bottles, branded pens, branded playing cards. You come stay with her. It's an experience. And you know what? If you don't have enough value and you don't have enough pride in your house to get it to that level, hey, sorry, you're sure you're a great person. But if you don't want to put the investment in up front for us to really bring you under our brand.
Yeah, it's just not a good fit.
It just means this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the same thing for the next 20 years over and over and over and over. And it's a very, very difficult situation. It's a very difficult business.
Well, and it plays into your revenue management strategy, because when you know your brand, and if, you know, it's difficult in short-term rental because everyone that we talk to is a luxury brand. We love that, but that word is been
loosely
down. You know, and it's like, okay, now some of our clients, we look at, we're like, oh, this is, you're there, like, you deserve the luxury brand. Your revenue strategy has to be a luxury brand strategy. You cannot be having 50% off a hot deals, this, that, the other thing, if you are reaching for the higher end clientele, the higher end level of marketing, it all comes full circle with that. And now, granted, there is a place for everyone. You know, whether you are just across the street from the beach and you're a two bedroom little cute condo that you're clean, you may not look like you're on HGTV, but there is someone that wants to book you. There's a product for everyone. And so that's not a dig to anyone who says that they're luxury and they're not. Like, it is, there is something for everyone out there. I mean, look at hotels. You've got the Ritz-Carlton and some other hotels.
You need to know your lane. You just need to know your lane. And
100%.
And it goes back to that statement of, like, you know, people have like the champagne taste on a beer budget. You know, like, it's the same thing, how you're pricing and your perception, and it's protection of your brand. You have to be true to your word and not try to undermine what you're trying to do the rest of the year.
Yeah. You don't see the Ritz-Carlton selling rooms for $69 a night.
Right. Like, no, exactly. No. Yeah, it's not.
But if you get $150 a night at Ritz-Carlton, I'm booking three.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is a great deal. Like, but that's, you know, you have to know your brand. And we, you know, walk through this analogy with our clients, depending on what they love and whether it's designer purses or it's hotel luxury hotels. Like, we use that example all the time. It's like, You need to know who you are. Then everything else can fall into line. Your marketing plan, your revenue strategy plan, how to get owners, how you, you know, what your office looks like, how you operate. Like that all starts at the top and comes down.
Absolutely. Well, you guys know the business
all the way around,
all around, all different parts of it. And we're very excited to very, very excited to see you at the upcoming conferences. And we've got some fun things in store there.
Just say I did not buy a ticket to the women's conference this year, but I will be there to hang out.
Oh, okay. Well,
hey, I'm gonna say this. That was one of the most fun conferences I had ever been at. Like, I mean, with like me and Andrew McConnell and then the guys, I can't remember, is it got to,
Got to go.
It was just us, and it was like, and Laird from Red Sky. Like, we had a blast hanging out with you. We're gonna pick some people up from the airport. We're gonna have a big time with this. We've got some hats. We got some beanies. We got some buttons. We're gonna have a big time at DARM and the women's conference. And I know that my team. I know Rebecca's excited. Kelly's excited. Always a pleasure whenever we get to hang out in person.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with you ahead of Women's Conference or DARM, I would imagine after listening to this episode, some people have questions and they might want to maybe sit down for a coffee with you at the event. What's the best way for them to get in touch with y'all?
You can reach us on LinkedIn or on our website, fill out the contact us at revenresearch.com. But either way, LinkedIn or our website.
Yep. I would just, if anybody wants to get in touch with us, I would definitely hit Rebecca up. I don't look at LinkedIn all that much. And I've got probably about 300 emails that have already come in today. So, you know, reach out to Rebecca for sure, LinkedIn, revenresearch.com, mm-hmm. Rebecca at revenresearch.com. We're pretty accessible in that. And yeah, we would love to, if anybody wants to set up anything, we'll pick you up from the airport. We'll grab a cocktail or a coffee or something and chat about revenue.
Sounds great. Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with Annie and I, you can go to alexandanniepodcast.com. And until next time, thanks for tuning in, everybody.